Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales. This week's conversation is with elite marathon runner, distance runner, everything from 3K to the marathon. This guy has absolutely knocked out of the ballpark and run some amazing times, Liam Adams. He's a 2012 Olympian, went to Rio, and also has been in the Commonwealth Games at Glasgow. And you know, if everything goes his way, the next couple of months should be pretty close to getting selected to go to the 2018 Commonwealth Games up on the Gold Coast for the marathon event after running his 2:12 marathon just 2 weeks ago at the Berlin Marathon. So, really enjoyed chatting with Liam. Really grateful that he gave up, you know, 90 minutes of his Saturday afternoon, evening. And such a down-to-earth guy. For the times he's ran, there's just no ego there at all. And just super easy to talk to. He's pretty grounded. He's an apprentice electrician, so working really hard on a trade and also working pretty hard to be one of the greatest or best at the moment marathon runners in Australia. So really inspirational guy and really down to earth, and I really hope that you enjoy this chat with Liam. If you get an opportunity, please reach out to him on social media and say you enjoyed the chat if you did, and yeah, really get in his corner, because I think he deserves people to be really backing him going forward. And so good just to be able to talk to some guys so fast, and gives us an insight into his training and some of the experiences he's had in running. So I really hope that you get enjoyment out of this conversation. And I found there was plenty of moments where I was nodding my head and just agreeing with the things that Liam was saying. So going forward, I'd definitely love to touch base with Liam more regularly and kind of bring you more of his training and insight. So hope you enjoy this one, and reach out to him if you get the opportunity. Thanks guys, enjoy this chat with Liam Adams. Rightio, Liam Adams, welcome to Tell Me Your Tales podcast.
Cheers, Brad.
Last time I saw you, we were sitting in a bathroom in an Airbnb talking a bit of rubbish after the Berlin Marathon. It's a bit different this time around, hopefully.
Yeah, it was a good chat with you.
I got a bit excited with a 2:12 man kind of in the room. You just had a kind of breakthrough run at Berlin. I thought this would be a good opportunity to get some content, but I didn't even actually listen to it back. I wasn't game to kind of listen back and hear what we're talking about. But hopefully we'll cover a few of those topics again today and go from there.
Okay.
How'd you pull up first up though?
Yeah, pretty good actually. I've still got some marks on the feet, a few blood blisters from the wet conditions and that. But other than that, the legs are really good. And I've done a couple of little light sessions here and there, and legs feel like they're fairly recovered. I just haven't really pushed myself too hard at the moment.
Which is pretty smart, isn't it? Like you can't gain anything by rushing back after a marathon.
Yeah. I think you need to absorb it a bit and just take it easy for a couple of weeks, but also kind of think that you can't really back it off way too much. If you go and have 2 weeks off completely, I think by the end of that 2 weeks, you're back to square one. You're gonna start up, and your muscles are gonna be a little bit tired and a little bit shrunk. And I think your first run back is going to feel like you just ran a marathon the day before. Well, that's my experience with having 2 weeks off completely. So you just got to be a little bit active and go for a run every now and then, yeah.
How long did you stay over in Berlin for after the race?
I did two extra days. I guess usually I'm flying in and flying out. I'm there for the race and I don't really get to do much sightseeing. And I thought, well, I'm taking time off work here, so I got to make the most of it and do a little bit of sightseeing and stuff like that. And yeah, made the most of it and enjoyed my time there. Yeah.
It's a pretty cool city, isn't it? Like, I was there for the week before the race and kind of was the same boat. Like, I had a bit of time off work and thought I'll go straight there and just do the tourist stuff without kind of exhausting myself fully. But yeah, it was a cool city.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's got such history and that, and it's good to explore and have a look and go over a bit of history and see what happened in the past and that. So yeah, I really enjoyed the tours and that, and and as a runner, it's a pretty runner friendly city. So there's lots of trails and that, and it's a good healthy environment over there. Everyone's quite active, so. It's quite motivating.
Yeah, we noticed that because we went from there to the Canary Islands, where it was like massive tourist kind of island, and everyone's a bit overweight and kind of tanning every day, and like it was whole completely contrast to the Berlin scene, where everyone's kind of pretty fit and values their health a bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Hey, what I usually get the guest to do is introduce themselves. So do you maybe want to just explain to the listeners who you are and what you do?
All right, I'm Liam Adams. I'm getting a bit old in the running community. I'm feeling like a bit of a veteran now. I shifted up to marathon running and made my first Commonwealth Games team in Glasgow. Had a decent result there, ran 2:13:49 and came seventh overall. And then made my first Olympic team in Rio last year and had an all right result over there, 31st, and probably wanted a little bit quicker of a time, but I just wasn't in that form at the time. So, yeah.
Pretty modest. You've won in pretty much every single major fun run and significant race in Australia as well, like, you know, City to Bay, Gold Coast Half Marathon, Run the Bridge, Run for the Kids, Sydney Morning Herald Half, Launceston 10, National Cross Country, you name it, you've won it.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just doing research on you before. Like, I could not get over how many major races you've won.
Yeah, there's a bit of a list going. It kind of feels like I haven't been going too well recently in those races. But, yeah, hopefully I can get back into that type of shape and start winning some of those big runs again. So, yeah.
Do you put that down to kind of stepping up to the marathon and that kind of having a pretty big toll on your body?
Oh, not necessarily. I'd say when I'm in peak form or peak shape in marathon training, I can still run a pretty good 5-10k in that. I reckon I could have run a PB over the 10k in my form towards Chicago Marathon. And in a road race, it was City to Bay in Adelaide, I was 2 seconds off the course record there, and I went through 10k in under 28 minutes. So I was in pretty good shape there.
Unreal. On the roads as well. It's a pretty good course over there though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, yeah. It was a bit of a crosswind that year, but probably I think most other years there's a little bit of a headwind, so I guess it was ideal conditions for there.
And you've been running all your life?
Yeah, since about 10 or 11 I was introduced to athletics. I didn't do it out of the schooling system. I just competed for my school and that, and it wasn't until my PE teacher told me, oh, you should try out for the cross country team. And I was quite a sporty person. I loved playing all different sports. I was very competitive, and I thought, you know what, yeah, let's give it a crack and see how I go. And ended up making it all the way to state championships that year. And unfortunately, at state championships, I got asthma a few days out, and it was quite severe. So I didn't run. Like, I probably couldn't have ran for the next week or so. But yeah, the following year, I made it all the way to nationals and won a bronze medal in Darwin. And a couple of years later, I'd still made a couple more Victorian teams. And a couple of years later, I was probably a little bit disappointed with my result at nationals. And I thought I should probably start training a bit and look at doing it out of the schooling system. So I sought out a local coach in Gregor Grigorski, and I was very fortunate enough to have such a expert coach who's one of the best in Australia. And from there, that's how I was introduced to athletics, was mainly through cross country. Yeah,
it's a long time at the top though, isn't it? Like, you're kind of talking national cross country in, you know, grade 6, year 7 kind of stuff, and you're yeah, still up there 20 years later.
Yeah, I guess I've seen quite a few friends which have been up there, and they've been quite talented athletes. And I guess, yeah, they have other, I guess, life. You've got all these other challenges and that. And I guess a lot of people can't balance that, balance work and running and stuff like that. And I guess others were lost through to other sports. Other sports had poached them. So, yeah, I guess I was probably one of the lucky ones to stick with the sport.
Is that what you put it down to, though? Like, the fact that you'd been able to balance it well and didn't get the attention taken away in another sport? The kind of longevity in it?
Yeah, I think there's definitely that. You're always going to improve with training volume and training age and stuff like that. So, no doubts that that's put me in good stead to run a good marathon and that. So, yeah, I think that's probably it. And I guess I was quite driven to make Australian teams and stuff like that. And that was always my goal, to try and represent Australia at the Olympics and stuff like that. And it took me a bloody long time to get there. So,
but
I finally made it last year, which was great. That's a tick for me.
Have you been back to see that PE teacher that's seen a bit of talent in you?
I've been back there a couple of times, and I did there a couple of little events that they have, and a little speech at the school, and I thanked her for introducing me to the sport. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty special, that, isn't it? Kind of, I just know now as a teacher, like, you see these kids come through and you see their talent, and I think you watch the way that you race though, and it was probably that grit that she saw early on. Like, you've just got that sense of determination. And even, yeah, I was looking at some of your YouTube wins at, like, the City to Surf and things like that against Shelley, and you've, yeah, just kind of got that bit of mongrel about you that you don't like anyone passing you in the last 200 metres.
Yeah, I reckon I probably had that a bit more as a junior, and I think I probably lost it over the last few years, and I kind of want to get it back, really, yeah.
Yeah, why do you think you lost it?
Oh, I don't know, I just kind of feel like I've been a little bit more content with coming second and third. I guess I haven't felt too disappointed with those type of results, or yeah, running just under a PB. I don't know. I feel that I was always chasing a PB when I was younger, and I was very disappointed if I didn't get it, and I'd be driven to work even harder to get it. So I feel like I've lost it a little bit, and I just want to get that back. And I've kind of felt like this last year since that injury from Rio, I've lost it a fair bit, and I've been a little bit of a different runner since then. So, yeah.
Well, let's maybe talk. We'll get to that kind of now, I guess. I was planning for it a bit later on, but the step up to the marathon in 2013 at Melbourne to qualify for the Comm Games, like 2:14 first up on, you know, Melbourne, sometimes fast, sometimes slow kind of thing. So you would have been pretty impressed with that step up and debut marathon?
Yeah, I was quite happy. It was quite unknown how I was going to run. I guess everyone's in the same boat as what I was that day. It was... I've just been told stories of how you're going to feel after 20K, 30K, and what hitting the wall is going to be like, and you're going to experience it, and it's going to be the worst feeling you've ever had in a race. So I was a little bit scared and nervous of how that was going to go, and I felt amazing right up until 30K, and then once they got, I was in the front pack, and the guys decided to make a move, and they ran that next K in about 2:50, and I kind of went with them, and I'm going, oh, these guys can run about a 60, 61 half marathon. Maybe I should back it off a bit and ease it up and go to my own pace. And I still ran that K in about 2:54, but I felt the pinch a K or two later, and I blew up a bit, yeah.
2:54 at the 30K mark, going down. Yeah. What's that road down there, like the beach road in Elwood there?
It was at that mark, I was going down St Kilda Road.
Well, while we're here as well, just to give the listeners, if they haven't heard of you, obviously they're not paying a lot of attention to the Australian and international kind of racing scene, but do you want to maybe just go through your PBs, maybe from 3K up to the marathon?
Okay. Yep. My PBs for 3K, it's 7:53. I did that in 2011. For 5K, I've done 13:31.21 in California in 2013. And for 10K, I've done 28:11 also in California, and that was in 2012. My half marathon, I should have smashed this PB a long time ago, because it was actually a PB from my first half marathon, and that's 63 minutes and 28 seconds on Gold Coast in 2012. And I've got within a second or two of that result two or three times, so and off probably not the best shape, so a bit disappointed in that. And my marathon personal best is 2:12.52 from Berlin the other week. So yeah,
it's funny thinking about all those dates, isn't it, like 11 13 12 12, and then 2017, like getting that marathon PB the other week must have been a bit of kind of, not I guess pressure off, but a bit of relief that you've got a current PB on the board.
Yeah, definitely. I'm starting to get a fair bit of doubts on how I was tracking and whether I'd be able to run a PB again, just because I'd had all these horrible results over the marathon. It just seems like everything would go wrong. So it was quite a relief to run a personal best off probably what wasn't the best form I've ever been in going into a marathon. So
yeah. So when you say kind of some terrible marathons, you got to put that in context, because they're still really quick. But I guess I've just got them listed here. So the 2:14 debut at Melbourne, then you went to the Com Games and ran 2:13, and everything's kind of going in the right direction there with a seventh place overall.
And then it went back.
But then the plan was to obviously qualify for Rio. And I guess when you've ran 2:14, 2:13, at, you know, the story's kind of written that you'll be the next guy and you'll be on all the teams and you'll just keep getting quicker and quicker, but it didn't kind of pan out that way. And qualifying for Rio was probably a bit bigger of a challenger than you thought it was going to be?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I was very confident that I was going to make the Rio team. And once I had that hamstring go at the 22K mark in Chicago, and I was on about 2:11 pace at the time, I was just like, oh, no, what's going on here? Never experienced this before. And I thought I was still on a good time, so I was just going to push to the line, and it just got worse and worse as the race went on. So, yeah, I was quite disappointed with that result, but
you still creeping up and stuff, weren't you? Like you had to stop and stretch it out?
Yeah, I stopped about five times. The first time I stopped was probably 24, 25 Ks into it. So I twinged the hammy. It was on a corner around about the 22K mark, and it was feeling like it was twinging and pulling every now and then up until about the 25K mark, and I just had to stop and stretch it out. And by about 30K, one of the race officials was following me the whole way, because I think they thought that I was going to pull out. So, but luckily I didn't, and I've never pulled out of a race. Well, not until the race after that. Yeah. So.
But thinking that would have been like, you go to Chicago, which is what, 10, 8 months before Olympics, you kind of get the qualifier on the board, and then you just worry about running well at the Olympics. Was that the initial plan?
Well, it was to run well, get the time on the board, and then go have a standard track season and try and see if I could run some times and qualify in some other events. But I was probably going to choose the marathon anyway if I did. But yeah, that went out the window as soon as that happened. I knew it wasn't going to be a time that was going to get me in the team. And 2 weeks later, it was a week later, Brad Milosevic ended up knocking me out of the top three. So, yeah, obviously I was going to have to run another marathon and chose Lake Biwa.
Yeah, that's right, in March. And then you went there and it was a DNF.
Yeah, first DNF I've ever done in any race, as even since a kid. So I've kind of always prided myself on pushing right to the line, regardless of how much it's hurting. I've always managed to finish a race, and I guess when you've always lived by that, and you've got an Olympic spot on the line, and you know that what's happened you could probably recover from and probably reload and try and qualify in the next month or so, I kind of felt that it was probably the wisest decision, especially when I was at the 35K mark and I had looked at my watch and I knew that there was no possible way of I was going to improve on my race from Chicago or get that third spot. So I thought it was a wise decision to pull out, and I don't know, it's kind of a little bit shameful, but it worked out in the end, yeah.
Well, in hindsight, there was a right decision, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So,
and you were flying early in that race too. Like, what did you split kind of 10K in that day? Can you remember?
It was a bit suicidal, really. I felt, well, I kind of was stiff before the race, and I was quite concerned at how stiff the back was and the hammies were, and put deep heat through the back and the hammies and that. And when I got going, when I was racing, I felt awesome. I felt like I was just cruising along, doing a bit of a tempo run. And the first 10K I've ran through in about 30:15 or something like that. And I just like, what the hell am I doing? It's just way too quick. And I kind of looked around. I'm like, there's no one behind me, but there's a decent pack that I'm sitting with. And I kind of just went with them. And I just stuck in that pack. And we went through halfway in about 64, 41 or 45, around that. And by then, everyone was blowing up. And what I'd worked out is that a lot of the guys which do that race, they're there to run a quick half marathon to qualify for other big events or a half marathon championships, which was later on. So a lot of them would just run as hard as they could for halfway and then just run the last half of the race just heavy as and just blowing up. So it was a different race to what you'd experience anywhere else.
Yeah, you hear that about the Japanese marathons. It's like, yeah, you either go for it or you don't kind of thing. There's no kind of pacing yourself early on.
Yeah. And the thing was, pulling out of that race, it was shameful because they're all about finishing. Their whole culture is about finishing at all costs. They're just absolute animals. The way that they run, and they will push themselves into the ground, and they probably won't walk for a day or two if necessary, but they'll make that finish line. They'll definitely make that finish line. So
yeah. So what was the headspace like after that? So you've kind of, you know, the Chicago plan hasn't gone well, and then the Lake Biwa backup hasn't gone well, and it's like, what were you kind of thinking?
Well, it was kind of a worst nightmare, really. I'm just like, I should be running a time to qualify, and I know I can qualify. It's just I can't finish a race properly, and there was lots of doubts in my head at that time, but I still knew that I was in pretty good shape, and the fact that I went through halfway and still felt good at the time that I pulled the hamstring, it's just had to pull out because of that issue at the 27K mark in Lake Biwa. And that was, I knew exactly when it went. It was when I leant over to grab a drink at a drink station. I just felt it pull, and I'm just like, oh, no. I knew what was happening, but yeah.
What kind of support did you have then? Like, are you calling someone to kind of discuss it after the race? Or was that the year like Zaka and Mattress and that were over there? Like, did you have them as a bit of a sounding board? Because it could be quite lonely being, you know, a couple of hours flight away and not having a support team around you.
Well, I had those guys, and we were chatting after the race, and some of those boys had some good results, so they were quite happy in that. And we were chatting in, I think it was Mattress's room, and we were chatting away, and they were all getting behind me saying, look, yeah, you know that you can run quicker, you got to reload. And I was thinking the same thing too. There was a reason to why I kind of pulled out. I just wanted to give myself the best opportunity to reload and see if I can give it another crack. And the question was, could I recover in time and get another marathon under the belt before the qualification period ended?
Yeah, so were you just like in the hotel room just on Google, like Googling what races are in between that race and the qualifying cutoff time?
I actually did, yeah.
I could imagine.
I had thrown out and was looking at some races that I could possibly do, and London was one, and we tried to get into that race, but I was being told, oh, look, we'll reply to you soon, and I got a few weeks of we'll reply to you soon and whatever else, and then they replied 2 weeks later, and they're like, oh, sorry, you entered too late. And I was just thinking, why couldn't you have told me this 2 weeks before, immediately when I had emailed you? So we went and were searching for some other races, and I was quite lucky that my old coach, Gregor, his best friend, runs the Warsaw Marathon on the last day. So it was London and Warsaw, which was on the last day, and yeah, it worked out well because it was a quality race, and managed to sneak that qualifying time in the end.
Yeah, 2:14, fifth overall. Would have been stoked with that.
Oh, definitely. I didn't expect to finish that high up, and I kind of went in there not knowing if I could hit the pace that I wanted. I wanted 2:15. I thought that would qualify, and it would put the pressure on a few of the boys which were doing London, which was an hour or so later than my event. So I thought if I could run that, then the pressure's on them to try and chase my time. And once I crossed that line, I knew I'd done enough. So it was just wait and see and watch London Marathon and see how the boys went.
Well, it was an interesting time for Australian marathon running because it was almost like this narrative just unfolding in front of our eyes, and you weren't really sure who the three guys who were going to go to the Olympics were going to be, because I think Vlad also had the time, was lining up at London, and Mottram was making his debut, and Brad had kind of ran 2:16, and Jeff was there, wasn't he? And there was a whole – it could have been I think Michael Shelley was probably guaranteed, but the other two spots, it was just like you could flip a coin and you just weren't sure with the unpredictability of the marathon what was going to happen.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and I think it made for a very interesting last day of the qualification period. I'm sure a lot of people had their theories on how it would pan out and that, and I tried to keep it a little bit of a secret that I was doing Warsaw Marathon and surprise a few people. But I think that got leaked by Marty Dent a week or two before that. So
yeah, Marty put it on Twitter or something, wasn't he? I think he just gone through and checked the entry list or something like that and had a screenshot of it or something like that.
And I think I probably could have got away with it. I was actually checking the entry list and I didn't see my name on the entry list. I'd confirmed that I was racing in that and would organised that I was racing with the race organiser, and didn't see my entry on the entry list, and I'm like, oh, maybe I should put another entry in just so that it's all sorted and that. And the entry that Marty Dent found was the one that I put online. So
stitch yourself up.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
How'd you deal with that pressure, though? Like, I know it's all said and done now, and it's good just to be able to sit back and kind of laugh about it and kind of think of the time as you know, not as stressful as it was, but sure, you were pretty stressed. Like, this is an Olympic kind of singlet on the line here.
Yeah, it was. And having those two races, those two marathons previous to Warsaw in the back of my mind was absolutely horrible. It was like, is the same thing going to happen again whilst I'm racing? And it wasn't the greatest conditions there. And I thought I was a bit of strife. At about the 20K mark when the pack that I was with decided to work against each other, and it was basically who wanted to take the lead, and they were slowing down a heap, and I decided that's it, I'm just going to go for it from here and get myself back on pace and managed to click through a couple of quick Ks towards the end and got myself back on pace and got to the line in the time I needed. So it was such a relief, really.
And it was also – that was your third marathon in the space of like 6 months as well, wasn't it? Like, they're fairly close together when you think about it.
Yeah, and that's kind of a bit unheard of for Australian marathon running. You kind of – your typical marathon runner will probably do one, maybe two marathons per year. And, yeah, if you were pushing two, then I don't know, you're kind of going against the grain of what most people would think would be ideal for marathon running. So to do three in the space of that 6 months and still run a decent time on the third one, I was just over the moon, really.
Yeah. And what did you put any strategies in place to deal with that pressure? Like you kind of said, you were kind of trying to lessen the noise a bit and not get a lot of people involved that you were going to actually do that event. But were you, I don't know, meditating or kind of doing some breathing techniques? Or how were you keeping yourself level-headed with all that pressure?
Well, I tried to get into London Marathon, and a few people knew that I was trying to get into London Marathon, and I didn't end up getting into it. So I thought, oh, why didn't I get into London? So I thought, all right, I'll just keep this one quiet and a bit of a secret and let people think that I'm not racing or whatever coming into that last day, and then I'd put all my cards on the table before that. So I thought, well, if they're under the impression that I'm not running, then they're under the impression that they need to run what Yugi ran in Melbourne. So I thought that was probably the best option for me. So I was being a little bit coy there.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, just on that, because I'd find it quite interesting to know as well, what's kind of the process when you're talking about trying to get into these races? Is it, you know, send an email, or is it your manager emailing, or how does that work, the kind of negotiations to get into these big city marathons?
Well, for Chicago, Brendan got me into that, and he did a really good job with that. I had flights and that paid for, and they looked after me quite well. And Lake BYR, I also had flights paid for and stuff like that. So it was looking quite well. And then for Warsaw, the fact that I was entering so late and all that, I was just like, I'm probably going to have to use some Singapore flights that I'd won in a race, in a fun run. And I thought, if I could tell the race organisers that I'm willing to pay for my way there and all that, that they'd probably let me enter later. And usually the cutoff dates for marathons are more than a few months before that, and I think Warsaw was still taking on marathon registration, so I probably didn't need to do that, but I thought if I could say that, then they'd let me get an elite start and stuff like that. So I think that's how I ended up with Warsaw.
Yeah, and do you do some of that yourself, or does Brendan manage all that for you, or do you have to shoot some emails off and talk yourself up now and then to kind of get into the races?
For Berlin, I kind of had to do it all myself, and I tried my best and to get something from Berlin, but yeah, I was had to pay my way there and pay for accommodation. I was only going to get one night free accommodation, so I think for those type of events, they put all their money into the top guys, which are trying to break the world record. So I think for guys like me, you're going to have to pay your own way to get there.
It's pretty brutal, isn't it, though? Like, especially coming from Australia, you're kind of looking at, you know, $2,000 for return flights for you to chase your goal to be one of the best runners in Australia.
Yeah, yeah, it is quite expensive, but there are little grants here and there which can help you out, and I forgot to apply for a grant, so it was all out of my own pocket. And I guess now that I'm working, it's not too bad. I could afford to do it. So
yeah, well, let's get to that, because not many people would know that you're also working full-time as an apprentice electrician.
I started it was a week or two after Chicago Marathon, and I was planning before Chicago Marathon to do that. I was just thinking, well, I'm coming to that age group, and I wasn't getting support from Athletics Australia, and sponsorship was cut a bit, so I was only getting a bit of product from then on in, and I thought, well, I've got to start thinking about the future, really. It is expensive to travel overseas, and any little race that you do in Australia, any fun run that has a little bit of prize money on, you kind of use that money up in those months, and you use it to travel. So I thought, geez, I'm not saving any money. I'm getting to a point where you need to start thinking about the future, buying a house and whatever else, and thought, geez. And the fact that I had done a university degree, and I thought, I've actually got to start thinking about the future. And I thought, you know what, I want to do what I originally wanted to do out of high school, and it was a trade, and I chose to become a electrician. And yeah, it's, the thing is, I really enjoy work, and it's not too exhausting on the body for the fact that I really enjoy it. And I guess they go hand in hand. They distract each other. So the work distracts you from whenever you have something bad going wrong with your running. And if running's stressful, then you can always take it out with vice versa and that. So I've kind of feel that it's been good for the running, except for this past few months or half year or year since Rio, when I got injured and struggled to get that motivation back for the running. But I feel that it's coming back now after that result from Berlin.
Yeah, it must have been challenging at the start, especially like you said around Chicago when that marathon didn't go to plan, and then you're probably, I can imagine, flying back and off to work kind of a few days later.
Yeah, yep. And I guess I was new to work, so I was a bit nervous about what was expected of me and how it was all going to go. And I picked it up pretty quickly and started to enjoy it really quickly. And it kind of felt like I was getting paid to do a bit of a hobby,
yeah,
kind of.
That's good.
And it's really enjoyable work. And I felt that I've been able to balance it well. And going into Rio, I balanced it really well in that. So, yeah.
Well, do you think sometimes people kind of give up work to focus on running, and then they almost focus on running too much and it kind of does their head in? And when things don't go well with the running, it's there's nothing else in life that they can kind of put their attention into?
Yeah, definitely. I definitely feel that's the way. And I guess there was a period when I kind of was coming towards the end of my university and that, and I was having a lot more free time and through the day. So you'd do a run in the morning and a run at night, and you had a whole big period of the day where you weren't doing much at all. And I feel that you're putting a lot more stress on yourself when you're putting all your eggs in the one basket, and things might not be going the way that you want it to go, then I think it can get a lot worse for yourself. So if you've got that distraction, then I feel you've got an avenue where you can kind of distract yourself from all the bad things, and you can reset your mind and your body and come back to your running and your training and get it right again.
Yeah, and even I find just like socially being around people who aren't runners as well, and it kind of just puts you back in your spot a bit, and you realize that the whole world doesn't revolve around your running, and you understand that there's other people kind of living their own life, and you know, some people don't really give two hoots about running, and it's kind of good kind of sometimes to level you out a bit.
Yeah, definitely levels you back to the ground, and I guess it's kind of good having just normal conversations which don't involve running and that. So
with the obviously work, you work pretty like full-time, don't you? So like you're banging out kind of 40-50 hours a week.
So working full-time, and most weeks are roughly around 42-44 hours a week, and sometimes it's more, sometimes it's a little bit less, maybe 40-41. So yeah, it's a bit full-on, but I've got a bit of a routine going on what I need to do with my training and that. I definitely don't do doubles anymore, especially when you've got to wake up for work at be at work at 7 or 7.30. I just feel that I don't have the time to do a morning run. So I pack it all into the one run in the afternoon. And I guess I see a little bit of benefit from that. I don't know if I've convinced myself this, but I feel that the fact that I'm pushing all my mileage into the one run a day and that, I kind of feel it's a bit more specific for marathon running.
Yeah, and even, nearly getting 24 hours to recover between sessions. Like, it's not like you're out the door again in the morning 12 hours later and then, giving that extra time to recover and then reload.
Yeah, that, and I guess you kind of get a little bit more eager to get out there and go for your run rather than waking up and, I don't know, I'm not the biggest or best morning person, so it's hard for me to get out the door when it's freezing cold and it's pitch black.
Yeah, especially in winter and stuff. That's
it's horrible, but it's a little bit more motivating, say, if you can get out the door at about 5 in the afternoon when you get back from work and just stack it into the one.
Yeah.
And be a bit more efficient with your time management and allow yourself to get a little bit more sleep. So I guess I've convinced myself that what I'm doing's right.
Oh, I reckon it is. If you're banging out 2 12 marathons and top 10 at Berlin, it's got to be working.
Yeah.
And will you still do like 200K a week when you're training for a marathon and working full time?
Yes. There was periods that I've been doing that. And for Rio, I was doing that. And for a couple of the other marathons, I was getting that far out, like that much distance. But for this one, I probably only managed for Berlin. I only really managed about a month of 200K weeks. It was probably just under a month, maybe 3 weeks. And then after that, I was probably only getting about 180s, maybe 180s, 190s. And then it got back to some old bad habits that I was experienced when I was a little bit, when I was struggling with some motivation. So I kind of felt that my Thursday nights I would need a sleep to recover from work. I was a little bit exhausted, wasn't getting enough sleep through the week. So I was getting into some bad habits and I was probably only managing about 160K a week. So I had probably about a 5 or 6 week patch where I was only getting 150, 160K weeks. And it wasn't looking like Berlin was going to be a good result for me. Yeah.
Well, you were talking about those bad habits, I think, after the race and kind of just saying that, you're getting home from work exhausted and you'd kind of maybe tell yourself you'll have a nap and then you'll do the session and then you'd wake up and then move the session to Friday and then maybe ditch that and then put the session in the long run and do that kind of combined. But where's that fine line between that not being a bad habit and that just being listening to your body?
Yeah, well, to an extent, I actually felt that when I felt tired on those nights, it was just a lack of sleep. I was probably only getting about 5 or 6 hours sleep maximum for that week, and I just felt that I was getting a bit of a runny nose and a little bit run down, and I just need to go for a sleep. And I think having that night off, it just felt like I probably saved myself from getting sick. Getting a serious cold or whatever and struggling for the next 2 or 3 weeks just because I got sick. So it may have been a bit of a blessing, but I think for other programs that I've done, I've managed to get do quality programs off just 5 6 hours sleep. And going into Rio, there was a couple of weeks where I was only getting 5 6 hours per night and still managed to do really good sessions and get the runs done. So when I was going into Berlin and the fact that I wasn't getting those sessions or runs done, I just kind of felt that I wasn't probably giving it my all towards Berlin and that the prep wasn't that great, really. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, really, when you think about all the things you're juggling. Like, 5 or 6 hours sleep's not ideal for marathon training, having to change your training because you're working full-time and, then, you know, the next thing is you're on a plane going to the Olympics and you run quite well there.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess when you're really motivated and that, and you're driven, say, for me, Olympics have been a life goal that I've wanted to achieve, and the fact that I was training for the Olympics, there was a lot of purpose in what I was training towards, and I was running and getting the gains that I wanted, and everything was going well and quite right. And I guess for Berlin, a lot of things weren't going right, and I just wasn't getting that consistency that I'd like, and I guess it played on the motivation a bit, and I just thought, that's been a bit of an issue this last year, and the fact that I didn't have that motivation, I just felt like I haven't been the same type of runner I was pre-Olympics, so I just wanted to find that and try and get that back, and the fact that I wasn't helping myself achieve that by taking a day off, I just kind of felt that I wasn't being serious, but I guess, yeah, it actually probably did play into my hands that I saved myself from getting sick and managed to run a good time. So I think that if I can get everything right and give myself a bit more sleep in my next program, go to bed a little bit earlier, then everything will fall into place and I should knock off a lot of time on my PB.
So it's amazing, though. How did you stand on that start line with any confidence in Berlin 2 weeks ago, thinking that there was a possibility that you're going to run well?
Well, I'd done some pretty good sessions that I was really happy with, and I thought, yeah, these have been quite marathon specific, and I think these are going to help me over the last half of the race or last 10K of the race, and I had that confidence, but there wasn't that consistency, and the fact that I wasn't getting that mileage and that, I just thought, oh, I'm going to struggle here a bit, and I thought, you know what, my PB is not that great. I ran my PB ages ago, and I should have been running quicker than that since then, that a PB is definitely still achievable. And I thought, if I can get a PB, that could possibly get me on the Commonwealth Games team. So that was the goal going into it. And I thought, if I can kind of run it like I did for Warsaw and just time trial it a bit, that I should be able to run the time that I want and get into that team. And yeah, I managed to do that.
Do you find that you're almost a big time racer as well? Like, is there a switch that goes off in your head once that gun goes and it's the preparation doesn't worry you anymore because it's time to race?
Well, I think for those big type of races, you put in a bit more preparation and a bit more emphasis on those races. So your whole program's geared to those big races. So everything you do in that program's geared towards running your fastest on that day. And if you can try and tick most of those boxes, then you should be in good stead going into that race. And I feel that I've done that for quite a few of my races. It's just I've had horrible things go wrong on the day. It's marathon's not you haven't completed the marathon through doing all your training, and there's still a million things that can go wrong on race day. And as I've experienced with many of my recent marathons, that can happen. And I kind of felt like I'd lost that a bit. For Glasgow and that, I ran well, and I thought that it was quite a good result and that, but just recently I felt like I wasn't getting it right. And same with Rio, I kind of felt that everything would fall into place and that I'd run a lot better than what I did. And I thought top 30 was going to be achievable there, and I was going to run a lot quicker than what I did. But I managed 31st, and that wasn't too bad, but the time was quite disappointing. So I've kind of been a bit nervous going into these races, especially Berlin, knowing that a lot of things haven't gone right for these big races that I've been spending a few months trying to prepare for. So
yeah, well, let's spend some time just talking about Rio for a minute. So, like, are you a harsh judge saying that the time wasn't that good, though? Because, you know, your PB was 2:13, you've run 2:16. It's a hot day, It wasn't a fast course. Like, no one was running PBs on that day, were they?
No, I don't think many people. If you check the results, I think a few people did run PBs and that. But as I said before, I felt that my PB from Glasgow, I could definitely improve on, and I could still do it in a marathon such as Rio, when you're that geared up and pumped up to represent Australia, and you just feel that you're going to go to that next level. Like, you've done all the training, you've trained the house down, and it's race day. You're on the big stage, it's race day, and you just think that everything's going to fall into place and you're just going to have the best race of your life. And I kind of thought that was going to happen, and it just did not feel like that from the starting gun. So,
what about the whole Olympic experience? Like, you know, in the Florida kind of training camp beforehand, and then opening ceremonies, and in the village. Like, talk me through all that stuff, because that must just be, for a kid that started at athletics when he was, you know, 10 years old, and then you find yourself in that situation. Was that just blowing your mind?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Well, I got into the camp in Florida a bit late because I was doing a bit of altitude training in Flagstaff. So I missed most of the team. They left the day that I got there. So there was still quite a few of the distance guys there, and that was quite a bit of an experience going to that academy over there. Jeez, those kids have got it good.
Yeah, coming from a bloke who's doing an electrician apprenticeship, like working hard here, they've got an awesome setup.
They've just got the best facilities, and they get treated well. And yeah, that was just a really good experience over there. But I didn't really have the best experience in camp. I got some type of severe bug over there. I had a bit of gastro, and I didn't leave the room for a full day. I had stomach pains and that, and I didn't eat for the whole day. I just stayed in bed and slept the whole day just because I was in so much pain, and skipped that session that I was supposed to do that day just because of it. And then the next day I kind of went for a jog and just changed my days around, and I still managed a good session. The session that I was supposed to do on that day, I managed to do a pretty good session a couple of days later, which was in some ridiculous humidity. And the fact that I did that on that day, I just felt that that's far worse than what I'm going to experience in Rio with humidity and temperature, and that if I could do that, then I should feel pretty good in the Rio conditions. And I got into Rio, it was halfway through through the program, so a lot of things had happened, and you just heard all these stories about how the accommodation was and stuff like that, and you're kind of thinking, oh, well, kind of lucky that I'm going into the village a bit later than everyone else. So once I got there, it was good. It was really enjoyable, and the village was amazing. Like, just everything that was offered to the athletes was great. It's just, I guess, you had a couple of things that you're probably not used to seeing in Australia. So it was a couple of there was a little bit of skirting falling down from the rooms that we were staying in, and a couple of live wires. And as an electrician, you just look at that and go, wow, how can you possibly get away with that? So
you didn't get up there and fix any stuff? They didn't ask you to jump up on a table and fix something?
Well, I don't know the regulations and legalities over there, so I'm not touching it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and opening ceremony, did the athletics team, like, did you go there?
Oh, no, I was still in Flagstaff.
Still in for the camp. Opening, so. Yeah, right.
Well, I was in Flagstaff, and apparently the Australian athletics team had a bit of a thing going at the Florida camp, so I missed out on that too. They had a bit of a ceremony, and they all got their jackets on and all that, and I'm still in Flagstaff, and I'm trying to watch it on TV, and it wasn't live. They did it 2 hours later, so it was just like, it took away from the experience of seeing it all and and the excitement. So I was a little bit disappointed, and I still haven't been able to wear that jacket, the opening ceremony jacket. I've never had an opportunity to wear it, so I'm spewing about that.
Oh, if anyone's out there and wants Liam Adams to come along as a guest speaker to get to wear the jacket for the first time, let us know.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a bit bittersweet? Like, you know, you're sitting in the, you know, your hotel room or your bungalow or whatever it is at Flagstaff, and you're watching the opening ceremony on the TV, and you're kind of thinking, well, because your event was pretty much the last day, wasn't it? So
there's no good
being there that early. But at the same time, you're missing out on kind of an opening ceremony for an Olympics you worked so hard to get to.
Yeah, and I kind of did want to experience it, but I just thought that obviously you're there to compete and you want to do the best, but you want to do the best for yourself. So what's best for you? And it was definitely the best thing to not be in the village for that long and that. So, yeah.
And then what about like call room and stuff like that? You know, like Eliud Kipchoge's kicking around and Galen Rupp and kind of like the best runners in the world. And, you know, you're about to stand on the start line of an Olympic marathon. How is that kind of experience?
Well, it was all a bit of a blur and such a rush. We were like into the call room, like, get your chip on, get your shoes on quickly, go, get out there. And then they push you outside, and then you're behind the start line just running up and down trying to keep warm because it was still raining at that time. So it was quite an experience seeing such amazing runners around warming up and preparing for a race that you were going to do yourself. So, yeah. It's such an experience, yeah.
You don't go like all fanboy and anything, do you? Brad Croker was getting into me before Berlin because I was like, you know, oh, there's Kipchoge and there's Bekele. Like, I wasn't even focusing on my own race, just so stoked to be in the presence of those guys.
Well, I kind of feel that, yeah, you probably got to focus on your race, and probably it's exciting to see those guys and that. And at Berlin, when we were doing our warm-up, we stumbled across Bekele, and we were running the same pace for him as our warm-up, and it was like 4 minutes a K. I'm just like, looked at my watch, I'm like, no, we've got to slow down a bit. And Mitch I think he was getting a bit excited, and he jumped on the back of Bekele, and I'm like, Mitch, slow down a bit here. Save it for the race. And yeah, I guess you do get a little bit of excitement and a bit of adrenaline, and I think it probably contributes to your race too. But I don't know, I haven't worked out if that's probably best, or if you should refrain from getting too excited for that and focus on your race. I don't really know what the best solution is, really.
Yeah, well, I said to Brad, I'm like, I've got 42K to start focusing on my race. It's okay 10 minutes before the start. You don't want to be too up and about on the start line. Otherwise, you'll go through 10K in 30.05 or whatever you did at BY. Just super stoked. Yeah. Back to the American stuff, like you said about the facilities and stuff over there, did you ever get offered any scholarships to go over and do the American system, like straight out of high school?
Yeah, I had a few approaches when I was in high school. I had a couple of calls at like 2 o'clock in the morning saying that they were interested in recruiting me and all that stuff, and I was quite tempted, and I was quite interested in doing it, but I just heard many stories that I think it was before a lot of Australians had had some recent success over there. There was stories that you get burnt out if you go there. They don't know what they're doing, the coaches and stuff like that. And that if you went there, they were just going to train you into the ground. And if you weren't performing, then there goes your scholarship and you're back to Australia. So I'd been warned that, and my coach at the time, Gregor, was strictly against me going, so I did what he thought was best, because he seemed to know a lot with my running and seemed to get the results for me. So, I listened to him and didn't take up any of those scholarship offers.
Yeah. Take me through as well some of the significant wins that have really stuck into your mind. We kind of spoke about them at the start of the show, that pretty much every major fun run in Australia you've won. But do any really stick in your mind as kind of like top three fondest moments from race experiences?
I'd definitely have to say Sydney to Surf is right up there.
back to back as well, wasn't it?
Oh, I think the first one really. I was running really well, and I was absolutely buggered with a couple of K to go, and I was still mixing it with Shelley, and I was just like, before I'd made that turn, I felt, oh, I'm just hanging on for dear life here. Shelley's about to make his move on this corner. I'm going to have to make a bit of a move if I'm going to try and hold on to him. And Shelley made a bit of a move, and I responded and managed to find myself in front. And I just thought, oh, you know what, I'm going to push to the line and go for it, and managed to run away with the win. So that was a bit of a shock to me, and it was a pretty good result. So I was quite happy with that one. And I guess the backing it up and the following year, it was probably a little bit less of a shock, but I went there and ran it solo and ran it hard and still ran a reasonable time. So I was quite happy with that result too.
Yeah, I watched that, as I said before, watched that Scissor Surf against Shelley earlier on today, and kind of you just left a bit of a gap for you around that inside with the last corner with 300 metres to go, and you kind of just snuck through and just put in the quick four steps and you were kind of away. You must have been running so scared that last 250 though.
I was, because I could definitely feel the lactic acid building up, and I thought, oh no, I'd gone too early. But Ben St. Lawrence, it gave me a little bit of advice on where to go, where I should be looking to make the run home. And I think he may have done the same thing to Shelley the year before. So I attempted that and got myself in front, and I thought, oh, well, Shelley's actually got a bit of speed. He's run a 338, 1500. He's ran quicker than me. So I thought, you know what, he's probably going to come over the top of me here. But I was just running scared and, yeah, managed to get to the line first. So bit shocked, yeah.
But it's a bit of that grit, like that how bad do you want it kind of thing. Like, remember that one, of course you remember it, you were there, like the one down in, I think it was Hobart, run the bridge where they finished inside and you and Benny were just like neck and neck and they had to get the photo developed to kind of see who won it that year. Like a similar story again.
Yeah, yep. yeah, it was basically, it was a case of who wanted it more, and he wanted it more. He did want it a heap, and I wanted it a heap, and we were battling to the line, and it was neck and neck, and I felt like I was just gaining towards the end, and I was getting there, and I lunged for the line and felt that I had it. I kind of felt like I was in front of him at the line, and I knew I'd got it, and I was a bit surprised because he's got a lot of leg speed too, so
Yeah, no, pretty cool. Like, yeah, and you haven't been in the opposite position, have you, where someone's done that to you? You always seem to have the winning kick.
No, I've lost a few. I think Mottram run for the kids one year.
Yeah. I remember that.
He gave me a bit of he kind of cut the line and coming into the finishing shoot, so I had to slow down because he cut me into a fence, and then I had to run wide to the line, and I kind of felt like I got across the line first, but they said he got there first, so I guess they saw it a bit better than what I would have. So he's done it to me, and I think many other runners have done it to me before, so
right. Hey mate, before I let you go, tell me about your hardest session. What's a session that you do and you just look back and think, yeah, that was pretty tough and you're glad it's done?
Well, I'd say it was probably before Rio Olympics, my 4x6K session on the track. And
on the track?
Yeah, on the track. So I was trying to just do lap after lap lap.
15 laps.
Competitive as possible, and just make it such a mental challenge. And I kind of felt that was a really tough session. And by the third rep, I was kind of buggered, and I had one more to go, and I thought, oh, I'm going to really struggle to hit the time that I want to run in this one, and managed to finish off strong that one quite well. So for that session, I did 17:54. 17:57, 17:52, and 17:51. And on that last one before I'd started, I just thought I was dead and just managed to just hold on to that pace, and it just got harder and harder as that session went on. And yeah, I was really happy with that one.
So strong, well under 3 minute k's. Like, that would stack up as one of the quickest times of the day at, say, a Sandown, you know, 6k equivalent, or a Gels Park 6k. like, that is top notch, and you've just done it four times.
Yeah,
pretty crazy. And another thing, what's another session that you do, and when you do it well, you know you're in good shape? Have you got kind of a go-to session that you like to do to give you an indication of current form?
I guess it's probably, I guess it's depending on what you're training for. I guess for the shorter events, you're probably looking at a quarters or a mona. That can give you a pretty good indication on how you're going. And I know that when I'm ticking under sub 14 for my quarter session, I'm doing like 13:50 or a 13:40 something, that I'm in really good shape. And but then again, it doesn't always pan out on race day to be that way. So yeah, that's a session that I feel for track races, some of the shorter stuff. But I guess for the longer stuff, I guess if I'm doing three times or four times 6K for my marathons, I know that gives me a pretty good indication of how I'm going and that in my programs. And I usually get a fair bit of confidence off doing a session like that.
Yeah. And that monofartlek, what kind of distance are you covering in that 20 minutes on a good day?
On a good day, 6.7 through to 6.8, I guess.
Yeah, pretty insane.
And I guess rest of the year, I guess I'm probably covering more than 6.3, 6.4, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, another question. I like to ask people at your level this question because it's often throws up probably answers that we don't expect, but when have you had a running experience where you've learnt a bit about yourself, like off, you know, after a good race or a bad race, but you've really come out of it learning about yourself and how you respond to, you know, good or bad things in running?
I reckon you get a lot of benefits out of your bad races. When things don't go well and you push towards the line, I think that just really helps you when everything goes well and everything goes to plan. When you're having a good day, everything goes well and it kind of feels like you're in the zone or whatever and that. And I think the fact that if you can push through a hard day, I feel that probably makes those days easier and easier. So I think some of my PBs, my 5 and 10K PBs, they've felt like probably the easiest races, like not quite the easiest races, but they've felt a lot easier than the days that you're running probably about a minute slower or whatever else and really struggling. So I feel that those terrible days do have a lot of benefit in pushing through to the line.
Yeah, especially when things aren't going well, kind of like hardening up and just getting it done.
And yeah, I think that if you do that, then that says something about your character, yeah, how much you want it and stuff like that. So
yeah. And then second last question is, how do you judge success? So what does success look like for Liam Adams, the athlete?
A kind of just personal goals, achieving your personal goals, really. I guess you probably can't have other people dictate what success is for you, because I guess they don't know the type of runner you are. They don't know what you're capable of and what you think you're capable of. And I think if you're orientated around running personal best and running the best you possibly can, you might not be in the best shape that you are, but if you can set yourself a goal and try and achieve that goal in that race, then I think that says a lot about yourself. And I think, yeah, I just feel that can kind of form you as a character and yourself. And I feel for me that I've lost that a little bit, but I want to get that back. And I think that determination will keep you running well. So hopefully I can find it soon.
Yeah. And do you have, I always ask people this final question is, do you have a mantra or a quote or a philosophy or something that you try to live your life by? I guess you kind of just summed it up a bit then with, you know, judging yourself on your own goals, but anything else you kind of live by?
Not really a philosophical person and have quotes and that, but I guess you get what you put out. Like if you train well, you train hard, but you train smart, then you put yourself in the best position to run the best you possibly can. So you basically dictate how you're going to run. So it's all about how much effort you want to put in. And if you put in that effort, then you'll achieve what you want to achieve.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Thanks again for your time today. What's next race-wise? Like, where can the listeners kind of see your name popping up next? Is that it now for Com Games Standard? You kind of put down that 212 and that's your card shown, or are you going to back up again, or what's next?
Well, I've still got to keep a little sneaky eye out on a few of the boys which are racing in the next few weeks. And I guess if I'm pushed out of that second position that I'm in at the moment, then I've got to really consider looking at running on that last day of the marathon qualifying period. So if I'm pushed out over the next few weeks, then expect to see me training up for another marathon on the last day. But hopefully I don't have to do that. But ideally I'd love to just try and run Zatopek and see if I can get into some all right shape for that. I kind of think that it's going to be tough coming off a marathon preparation and a program. So, and the fact that the rest of my track season is gone, because if I qualify for the Commonwealth Games, then my track season's gone and I'll have to start focusing on preparing for Gold Coast. So I guess Zatopek would be my next race that I might be looking towards. So yeah,
it's a healthy time for men's marathoning though, isn't it? Like, after a couple of years of it being kind of down, you got Collis stepping up and Chris Hamer and yourselves running well, and Michael Shelley races tomorrow at Chicago, so it's an interesting time again.
Yeah, how great is it really? What, there's eight guys who've got the qualifying time for Gold Coast at the moment, and there's definitely going to be more than that come the end of the qualification period. And you've got two guys run a top 10 in two of the biggest marathons in the world. So Shelley got top 10 in London, and I got a pretty good result in Berlin. And yeah, it's good. I just feel that you've seen over the last 5 years how much the women's marathon stepped up, and kind of feel it's them being a bit more Athletics Australia being a bit more relaxed with the qualification times and that. And I think it's encouraged a few guys to step up. And I think the men's marathon right now is getting stronger, as is getting quite strong at the moment. And it's probably a couple of years behind how much the females marathons progressed. But it's getting strong, and it's exciting times for marathon running in Australia.
Yeah, and especially you're right with those qualifying times a bit relaxed. Like, of course, well, you know, you're not going to run 2:18:59 and get picked to go to Gold Coast, but it gives people hope, and it kind of keeps the guys who are running, you know, 2:12, 2:14, 2:15 honest, because if they have a bad day, all of a sudden there's these, you know, guys who have just aimed for that 2:18 and kind of had good days and run 2:17, 2:18, and all of a sudden they've taken your spot if you have a bad one.
That's it. It's quite competitive now, and it's unknown, because you don't always have the best race in a marathon. And as I've experienced, I was, ranked fifth going into Rio before the last day. So if the qualification period was a few weeks earlier, then I probably missed my spot. So it is competitive, and yeah, I think it's only going to get stronger and stronger.
Yeah, yeah. Just on that as well, I know we're about to wrap up, but I'm interested in your thoughts. We just talked about the current state of men's and women's marathoning and how it's in a good space. But how do you, well, what's your opinion on the state of kind of local and state and national level kind of track and field?
Well, it's an interesting period at the moment.
What are you laughing for?
Oh, well, I went down to Interclub just today and, oh, geez, I think we've taken quite a few steps back with the progression of our sport today. I think that that's probably going to what I saw today is probably going to deter mass participation in our sport, and it's also going to deter people from going down there and trying to run a decent time. I think at the moment there's going to be a lot more emphasis on Milers Club. I think there's going to be more participation in Milers Club, which is good. It's more of a performance event, but I don't know. It's concerning times. I feel that the club atmosphere and environment's been taken away, and it's going to be more of a zone versus zone in the future. And you're going to have to travel more than 40 or 50 minutes each round. So it's not really a good time at the moment. I'm a bit nervous about what the future holds.
Yeah, for, right.
Yeah.
And that's it's worrying when a guy of your clientele who's been around the sport for, you know, 20 years has concerns as well.
Yeah, well, I think, well, Athletics Victoria has been the golden standard of athletics in Australia, really. All the other states have been following what we've been doing, and we've just replicated something that has been terrible in another state, and they're kind of trying to get out of that type of system, and we've replicated that, and we're taking steps backwards when we should be where we're the ones which were setting the standard for the rest of Australia. And I think Athletics Victoria probably has the most amount of memberships compared to Athletics New South Wales and stuff like that. And
well, even the numbers over winter are so healthy, and the participation is huge for the AV cross country and road racing season.
Yeah, and you'll see Athletics New South Wales just introduced Milers Club, and
yeah,
that's something we've had for a very long time, and I think that's going to do some good things for athletics in New South Wales. So
give me some context, though, because the last time I ran, you know, Shield or AV in Bendigo, it was you rock up, you put your name down for the 1500, the fastest 20 guys are in Heat 1, the next 20 are in Heat 2, and you kind of go head-to-head. Is it similar now, or what's the changes?
Well, I guess it kind of used to be a bit of you rock up, you kind of know who's going to be there, and you talk to each other, and you rock up, and the official goes, right, who wants to run this time and under? And five people put their hands up, they go to the line, they go, all right, we need to fill this, so we'll go up to the next time increment, and then that would fill the rest of the heat, and then you'd have guys which were the same ability racing each other, and now it's a bit all over the place. I think what you have to do now is you have to register online on Wednesday and say that you're going to compete. And last year you got punished if you were to register and not compete on the day. You would get, I think it was like you couldn't compete for two rounds or something like that.
Yeah, right. I think that's
ludicrous. But now they've changed that now. I think they saw that was a bit stiff and a bit too harsh of a punishment, because like most athletes, some have to work on a weekend and that, and they've got other commitments. So they might think that they're going to race on Wednesday and they might put their name down by then, but something comes up on a weekend and they can't run, and then they get punished for it, and then they miss another few weeks, and there goes most of their track season. So it's a bit harsh, and I guess what we've seen with today, half, I guess for my club, Athletics Essendon, half of them went to, a quarter went to Doncaster,
half of them went to the other venue, other metro venue. I think it was Nutterwadding, and then another quarter were at Geelong competing. So everyone's all over the place. You don't have that team atmosphere and team environment and stuff like that. And I think, yeah, it's being killed off a bit. Yeah, I think you now have to travel to compete in your local district events rather than going to your local club and competing there each week and getting the same type of competition that you usually would. You got to travel all over Victoria. I think next round for myself, I've either got to travel to Werribee or down to Frankston.
And you're in Essendon, Mooney Pond.
Both at least 40-minute drives. A lot more towards Frankston, so yeah.
For a 4-minute 1500 or an 8-minute 3K, it's a long way to sit in the car. Yeah.
And then I might rock up at 1:30, my event like today. A lot of people were under the impression that they were going to be competing at 1:30, and quite a few people weren't running until, I think the first female race was at 3 o'clock, and a lot of them were under the impression that they were running at 1:30, running with the guys. It was a mixed event, but now it's supposed to be IAAF certified, so they've got to keep, they're not allowing mixed races. It's got to be male, strictly male versus male and female versus female for qualification purposes. So they think that people are going to be running Commonwealth Games qualifying standards at
every heat
at a Shield event. And I could not tell you the last time that someone ran or jumped or threw a qualification at a Shield event, really.
So I guess you're kind of suggesting to, you know, make it a bit more grassrootsy and keep on to that, you know, community and team feel for the Shield focus, not kind of, yeah, let's make this really official so someone can hit a Commonwealth Games qualifier.
Well, yeah, grassroots, and I actually feel that we need to go the opposite direction. We need to be a bit more relaxed with regulations and the rules and trying to make it IAAF certified. I think it needs to be a bit more relaxed and a bit more inviting to the general public. Yeah. I think if you want to improve the amount of participation in that, be a bit more relaxed. Don't punish someone for putting their name down and not competing and telling them they can't compete for another
2 weeks. You're banned for 2 weeks. Yeah. It's almost the complete opposite. Like, we don't have track in Echuca Moama, but like, we've got parkrun, and that's kind of the complete, you know, everyone knows it starts at 8 a.m. you come down, doesn't matter if you're not registered, you just don't get your time. But it's all about that participation and community building, and you have a coffee with everyone afterwards, and it's, I can see how that's appealing for people, because, you know, we got in the car at 7:45 this morning and kind of fanged it to there and got out of the car 2 minutes before and had a run, and it's a complete opposite to Shield. And then you're not there for all day either. You can kind of get out of there 5 minutes after your run if you want to.
Yeah, well, that's it. It's a lot more relaxed, the park run and, say, a Milers Club. So I think that's the reason why they're becoming quite appealing in this day and age. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely appeals to the masses. I reckon we could bang on about this all night, mate, but I'm conscious I've already taken up a stack of your time. So thanks for that chat today. We could talk running any time.
No problems, Rady. Cheers for that.
No worries, mate, and have a good evening.
Yeah, you too, mate. Cheers.
Thanks.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.